Would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Salzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. So we have a package of items this afternoon. Why don't you read both 25 and 26, then we'll deal with them in turn.
Item 25, accept the City of Portland 2016 Federal Legislative Agenda. Item 26, accept the City of Portland 2016 State Legislative Agenda.
Okay, I want to call up Martha Pellegrino and her team in the relevant order to go through both of these, and I have a substitute. It is for both, right, Martha?
That's correct, Mayor.
So I want to move the, hopefully everyone has the substitute for the federal legislative agenda. If I can have a second for that, we'll have the substitute language in front of us. Any objections to that? We have to take a, probably should take a vote to accept the substitute and then have the hearing.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, now we're in order.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, Martha Pellegrino, I'm the Director of Government Relations, and my team and I are very pleased to be here today to present the 2016, we'll begin with the federal legislative agenda for your consideration and acceptance. So I'll begin today with just brief remarks about the process used to develop both of the agendas, and then walk through some of the changes since Council met in a work session on December 1st. And with me to help answer questions at the end is Niels Tilstrom, our Federal Relations Manager. So the process for building these agendas began back in August and September when we solicited potential legislative concepts from the bureaus and offices, and then we would then work closely with legislative liaisons in each of the bureaus to help vet these concepts for inclusion in the draft agendas. This vetting included outreach to our federal and state legislative delegations, as well as to community groups, business groups, and other local governments to find potential areas of alignment. During that time, the state legislature also met for two sets of legislative days in Salem in September and November, and these meetings gave us a sense of what the universe of bills and concepts would look like. And given the limited time constraints and bill constraints of a short 35-day legislative session, it really helped narrow the universe of what would be possible in the 2016 session. Next week, incidentally, we'll be back in Salem for the January legislative days, and that will there are already hearings scheduled on several of the proposed city priorities. In addition, that's when the bill stack will be introduced, so we'll have about 2 weeks before the official kickoff of the session on February 1st to really be able to dig through some of these pieces of legislation and what their impacts will be on the city. So turning first to the federal agenda, the report you have before you is substantially similar to what was considered at the work session and includes that feedback that you provided at the work session and subsequent to the session. So the drafts have also been available on our website for public review. There are eight top priorities, leading with housing and homelessness. Two new priorities were added at your request, including gun violence prevention and federal protected sick time. So just going through the change memo you have before you, on page one of the agenda, the affordable housing section was amended to include a request to the administration so that local governments and we can have more flexibility about how we administer federal housing programs. The climate change section was updated to include action from the 21st Conference of Parties in Paris and includes support for a federal carbon tax. The gun violence prevention priority includes support for federal actions to close loopholes and background checks. This also includes the support for the president's executive order announced earlier this week. The item also includes action to prevent those on federal no-fly lists or terror watch lists from obtaining firearms, as well as improvements to the mental health services, protections for victims of domestic violence, and research to track and report gun violence. Turning to page two, this priority includes the new federal sick time item, and this closely mirrors an issue that was in the city's 2015 federal agenda. On page 3, the federal brownfields tax incentive was moved up in the agenda to the investing in infrastructure section. And also on page 3, the Levy Ready Columbia item was added. Again, this is an issue that's been on past agendas, but the work is ongoing with the Army Corps of Engineers. Turning to page 4, the Columbia River Treaty was added to the Water Parks and Environment section, also an issue that has been ongoing. Page 5, there's a new item on sanctuary cities. This was an issue that was flagged during the work session. Also on page 5, the pre-disaster mitigation grant program was updated to highlight seismic and other natural hazard mitigation projects. And then on page 7, the domestic violence prevention item was updated to include a piece on preventing homelessness among victims of domestic violence. And lastly, a new item was added urging Senate ratification of CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. So that's just a quick overview of the changes since the work session. And at this point, we'd be happy to answer any questions on the federal agenda.
Tell us, I mean, I know, I understand what it means at a visceral level, but tell us what it means for us to support the president's executive order on gun violence. How might that be made real?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to take this? So one of the things we have found, and thinking about the administration's Clean Power Plan, I think is a really good example, where the administration is doing things by executive order that are very important to us locally, and that is trying to move things forward even when Congress is maybe not the best body to deliberate on these issues right now. One of the ways that it could be helpful is to have a number of cities in support of the executive order if there were legal action against the president. And there's been a number of times when Portland has signed on to amicus briefs in order to support the president. So I could see that as being an example of a way that Portland could come forward. Also opportunities potentially through the U.S. Conference of Mayors or National League of Cities where Portland can go on record in support of the president.
Are there any implementing actions that we should think about here?
I think that we'll be able to tell that soon. The announcement just came out this week, and so it's something we'll be tracking very closely, and I assume we'll be hearing more about it in D.C. in a couple weeks.
Yeah, okay. So you and I should maybe circle back to the council on that.
That would be great.
That we actually should do, in addition to being ready to defend the president's ability to issue an executive order, you know, within the scope of his authority, we also might want to do some things locally that are congruent with that or that support that in terms of what happens here at the local level. So obviously our ability to deal with guns is heavily prescribed by state law, but nevertheless, we ought to be an active partner if we have an opportunity to be.
Martha, I have a question. Seems to me that wherever possible, it's a good idea for us to be supportive of major initiatives of members of our federal delegation. And Senator Merkley has been a champion of ENDA, and it's not on our, I don't see it on the list. Thank you. I know it's something that we support in other ways, and I'm mindful of your admonition that we should not turn this into a Christmas tree of asks and ornaments. But what's your view of adding ENDA, or what is ENDA's status if we don't add it?
I think
what
it's
is ENDA, please?
What is ENDA?
Excuse me. It's the Employer Non-Discrimination Act that Senator Merkley took over from Senator Kennedy, seeking to provide non-discrimination at the federal level for the LGBTQ community. And it's something that Senator Merkley has been a real leader in Washington on, and obviously something we care about. But so just your thoughts on that.
Sure. I'm actually glad you raised that particular piece of legislation, because that's an example of where the city of Portland took action before either of the state government, and of course the federal government hasn't, but the state government adopted their bill in 2007. At that time, Senator Merkley was Speaker of the House, and so he was able to take that policy to Washington, D.C. That particular piece of legislation, this council has encouraged Senator Merkley on and has sent letters thanking him for his work on it. I think the reason it's not on the agenda is, frankly, that just nobody submitted it this year. It would be a very easy add since it's been part of...
I didn't catch
that. I'm sorry. It said it's just no one submitted it for inclusion this year, but it would be a fairly easy addition to include because it has been something that's been a part of council's past agendas.
Well, also, because it's a priority for one of our senators, we don't have to, you know, we can just align, but knowing that it's unlikely to pass in this Senate, but Mayor, I would at some point urge that we include support for ENDA on our package.
Okay. This would be a good point. I mean, why don't we add that?
But I would move, and this would be towards the end. This would be a
Okay. So Commissioner Fish moves the addition of support for ENDA to our.
Steve, we're going to have to take that.
Second.
Have to take your smartphone away from you. You're playing video games.
Yes.
and Martha, this would not be on our priority list because you've urged us to be very focused, but we would add it because it's consonant with our values and because we want to support our junior senator in his efforts to get federal legislation.
So it'd be back in the policy positions section under the relevant area, which would be healthy and equitable communities, I assume.
Yep, and I would suggest we just add it under the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women item and add that to that. And what we can do is, would you like to develop language now, or what's your preference, Mayor?
I think we can count on you to develop language.
Defer to you.
Great.
Okay. Right. So, any further discussion about that addition, that amendment? So roll call to accept that amendment, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
And Martha, I had just a question, if I could. We have as one of two of our legislative priorities involve areas where we're concerned that something bad might happen. And rather, so it's we're playing defense, not offense, if you will. And one of them has to do with municipal bonds. And Senator Wyden has been exploring alternatives to the current situation, including potentially a cap on the deductible interest, which would quite dramatically change the market for municipal bonds and would have an impact on interest rates. And then any changes to LT2 that would impact the waiver that we have, being the only city in the country that has a waiver from the treatment option. I know these are prudent things to have in there as sort of, you know, shields. Is there anything that in this year's, in what you're hearing in Washington about this year and the upcoming session that gives us any additional concern that there could be progress on either changing the ground rules on municipal finance generally and LT2 regulatory?
So there has been some discussion of whether tax reform would come up in this coming year. And if tax reform comes up in Congress, I expect municipal bonds will be a part of that discussion. So I think it is important for this council to continue to signal to our delegation that please don't tie our hands on how we fund infrastructure, whether it's water, sewer, transportation, or otherwise. It's also the tool that's used to build schools and any other type of public building. So. You know, having said that, it being a presidential year, Congress won't be meeting as often as they normally do, and the ability to do big things is very difficult to do in a presidential election year. So my level of concern is not extraordinarily high, although in addition to one of the members of our delegation, it was something the administration had signaled that they wanted to do early on in their term. And so when you had the Democratic administration and Democratic members of our delegation trying to roll back financing options, that's why it's important for the city to be rigorous in its opposition to making changes to that. On the LT2 issue, the EPA has been involved in doing periodic review of the LT2 rule. It's something that we are monitoring and the Water Bureau is closely monitoring. And if there are any changes or any new rule language, that's something we would obviously very quickly bring to the City Council. So it's something we're monitoring and are watching, but we're not expecting major changes in the coming year.
Well, we might just be the only city in America that's impacted by a more stringent rule. And we already do robust testing in order to be in compliance with our waiver. So. Good, but those are regular features of our agenda because we're trying to make sure that a bad thing doesn't happen.
That's right. Yeah.
So thank you.
Other questions, comments, additions? Anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Great.
So is there anyone who wants to testify on this? Yes, there is. There's someone who wants to testify on this. So we'll give him the opportunity, and then we'll take up the action on this in the state program next. Good afternoon, Lighting.
My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX.
Just a couple of concerns I have on this is that one of the issues that I have on the climate change is obvious that we want to divest in fossil fuel extraction companies, but I want to have a clear understanding that I want to start thinking more on where are we going to invest that money. And what I want to have an understanding is that I want to see divestment in fossil fuel extraction companies and investment in the affordable housing and homelessness companies. And I want to get thinking on that to start figuring out how we can do that with certain investment vehicles that will enable us to do that in the future. And why I say that, I want a smooth transitioning over from fossil fuel industry, but I also want to create jobs, create housing, and also decrease homelessness. And I want a little bit more thought put into that, if I could possibly have that. Now, issue number two would be on the Levy Ready Columbia. We keep saying we're going to try to recertify that. I think we're past that point at this time. When that was originally built, was to protect farmland and farms. We need to start more calculations on the overall value of the airport, existing businesses around the airport, and obviously the population base of the people. I'm looking at more of a build new levy in phase one to protect the airport. And I want to have more studies again conducted on what the cost will be to build a new levy. I think now is the time to look at that. Now is the time to have discussions on the funding possibilities. And I'd like those discussions to take place. I think that'll be one of the largest projects that we'll see in the Portland area. And I think we need to start looking at some serious numbers in the possibilities to build new and understand that now is the time to do that based upon the valuation of the Portland Airport, surrounding businesses, in the current population base we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? All right, so a motion is in order to adopt the report.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Thank you for your great work in helping us to assemble this document, as always. Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Thanks so much to the team. Aye.
Hales?
Good work. And lightning on that point, I think the analysis that's underway now will help us determine whether we have to do improvements or replacements of those levies. I hope it's only improvements because replacements might be more expensive, but your point's sound nevertheless. So we're getting that engineering work done now. Nevertheless, we're going to need federal support in order to make it happen. Thank you all very much. Aye. Okay. So let's move on to the state legislative agenda, item number 26. We've already read it, so let's hear your report, Martha. Team?
Hello again. And with me is Elizabeth Edwards, our State Government Relations Manager, and Andy Smith, our Senior Associate. And turning to the state legislative agenda, again, the draft is very similar to what was brought to you for the at the December 1st work session. Again, the top priority in the state agenda is housing and homelessness. The four items in this priority, beginning with lifting the preemption on inclusionary zoning, request that the state give Portland more authority to address needs locally, and that they not further intrude on local decision making. The new item added to this list of the housing priority is opposing the extension of any extension of the preemption on local construction excise taxes, and that preemption is set to sunset in 2018. So then turning to page three, the climate change priority was amended to include more types of carbon reduction legislation. And you may have read that there was a deal struck between the environmental community and the utilities to drastically increase the amount of power generated by renewable resources by 2050 and phase out the use of coal power. So we're expecting a bill to come forward during the 2016 session that memorializes this agreement. On page four, the transportation and funding safety item, this item was updated to explicitly call out support for city vehicle registration fees. And lastly, on page five, worker protections was added to the list of examples of preemptions that the city would vigorously oppose. So that's just a quick run through of the changes on the state agenda, and all three of us are available to answer questions.
Yeah, I think particularly given the discussion yesterday about the city clubs report and the need to not be held back from adopting local solutions, that's very helpful to have that in there.
Martha, I have a question under on page one under affordable housing and homelessness. Under the lifting the preemption on inclusionary zoning, my sense is that we need to give you as broad a charge as possible, since there's a lot of moving pieces here, and there's even some talk, if this thing gets bogged down, of doing a Portland-only solution. In light of that, and in light of the complexity of this issue, why is there the qualification at the end of this paragraph about wanting to address workforce housing, since ultimately how we structure a program locally once the preemption is lifted is a matter of the council and the community to shape, and it could be some combination of extremely low-income housing, workforce housing, and any number of things. But I'm just curious, why are we circumscribing and prejudging what it might look like by referring to workforce housing when the council has yet to take up how we'd even structure this once the preemption is lifted?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. As you're aware, there have been a number of runs at this piece of legislation over a number of years, and none of which have been successful. This year, the bill is being taken up in the Senate by Senator Michael Dumbro, who chairs the Senate Workforce Committee. And there's an interest in crafting state legislation to help tie in with a workforce priority. I don't think that that would necessarily restrict what council would choose to do with that. But the reason why it's framed that way is to really give a different message, the message really being that we want people to be able to live in the cities in which they work. And really trying to simplify what the message has been on inclusionary housing over some number of years, and getting a number of labor unions involved, and really expanding the tent. So I don't know if there's any, I don't believe there's any intent to restrict how it would be implemented, but really it's a way to approach the issue this session that's a bit novel than in prior sessions.
Okay, but I just want to be clear. We could be talking about deeply subsidized units. We could be talking about focusing on low-income adults, deeply very poor families. We could be talking about working families. We could be going up to 100% MFI. My preference, and I hope the council's preference, is that we have as clean a process in the legislature as possible, with as few sideboards as possible, where there's a lifting of the preemption so that we can then legislate. I'm afraid that if we start putting too many sideboards on it, then this gets hijacked by whatever the flavor du jour in the legislature is, and that means we're limited in how we can use this tool. And I think this council has been pretty consistent, like most recently in discussion about the Housing Investment Fund, of putting as few sideboards and strings on the money that we use so that the council can decide how to allocate it within the framework of the city-county home forward plan.
I didn't regard this language as a sideboard. It's just, to me, it was just explanatory that this is why we want to do this. Exactly how we do it will, I hope, be our prerogative once they do indeed lift the preemption. Yeah, I think tactically the only sideboard that I would be interested, or not interested, willing to entertain would be if it's multifamily only as opposed to multifamily and single family, that's what we really need. We don't particularly need inclusionary zoning on single-family development in Portland because it isn't going to do us very much good. But inclusionary zoning on multifamily development will do us a lot of good. So the legislature got all tangled up in that issue the last time, deliberately or accidentally, and we don't want them to get tangled up in that issue. We want them to set us free. But if they have to only set us partially free, please set us free for dealing with this in apartments.
Well, I completely agree, Mayor. And of course, the virtue of focusing on rental versus home ownership,
right,
is you have fewer forces allied against us. Home builders, for example, have a different view of this on rental than they do around home ownership. What I'm triggering off of is that we have qualified the need around workforce housing. Workforce housing is an area of need, but it is not exclusively our area of need. And ultimately, the council can decide in crafting an inclusionary housing policy what kind of housing we want to incentivize.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with striking that last sentence from the description, because it is just descriptive. It doesn't improve the clarity of our position. So unless Dan...
I would strike it, and you could come back to us and say the realities of Salem are that the only way this is going to pass if it's tailored a certain way, and then we can adjust our strategy. But I just don't think it's appropriate for us to prejudge. Last time I got hung up on home ownership and all kinds of sideboards and lots of inside the Salem Beltway politics about defining what a win looks like, even though it had virtually no currency locally here. And my view is the cleanest kind of preemption to give us the latitude to craft our own is what we should be doing. And I would move to strike the last sentence so we're not circumscribing what we're trying to
do. Do you have any concern about doing that?
I think it's fine to strike the last sentence. What I will say is that the prospect of doing a clean lift that includes both apartments and condos and single family, it would be very difficult. I don't think you're going to get a clean. There will need to be some degree of sideboards, I think, in order to get to that, particularly rentals or apartments. And so the starting point of the bill is drafted is very similar to what the Speaker endorsed last session, but makes very clear that it applies to, regardless if it's a single-family home or a condo or an apartment, it applies, which gives this council the maximum amount of authority to develop an inclusionary housing policy that fits for Portland.
Yeah, but even without the last sentence, that's
mm-hmm.
our
fine.
Position.
Yeah.
So I see anything wrong with removing that.
Sure.
I think, again, you're right. It's not going to be we're not going to get a universal lift, I would be surprised if we got a universal lifting of the preemption. But the one lifting that we want clean is multifamily development in all its forms, which includes condos and apartments and so forth. All right, is there a second for Commissioner Fish's motion? Okay. Any further discussion about removing the last sentence? Roll call on that, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Any other suggestions for amendments to this document? Anything else from you and your team?
I don't think so. One thing I would like to flag is that on January 28th, we have a legislative breakfast set up with the council and our legislative delegation. It was extremely successful last year, and that will be an opportunity for you to present these legislative priorities to the delegation. I also would just like to thank my team for the very long hours spent developing the agendas and the legislative liaisons, both in the bureaus and your offices, who really work tirelessly with us to not only develop the priorities, but implement them once session starts. So I just want to end with a big thank you.
Good work. And on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the Portland Legislative Delegation is having a community forum on housing affordability. So we'll have a chance to make sure they know this is important to us then. Okay, thank you very much. Anyone want to speak on this item? Come on up, Lightning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I guess my main concern is on the transportation funding. On the gas tax. I reviewed the City Club report. I felt it wasn't complete. And I have questions on the $205 million per year that they're saying will be needed for the next decade. I want a tremendous amount of more data to substantiate that statement. One of the issues I have also is that when we get to so many different things placed out to take a look at on the transportation needs, I think a lot of people are going to start to push back aggressively on this. And I think we need to have an understanding that due to the fact of the amount of deferred maintenance, tremendous amount over many, many years that we're at this point, is that we have to also have the private sector come in and begin to fund this. And what I mean by that is that I really think an opportunity within the city limits to maybe have Google, Uber step in get exclusive rights to driverless vehicles throughout the city and pay that over the years at a certain payment for that right. I think that it's needed at this time and apply all that money, again, toward maintenance of the streets and have an understanding with them that we are in need of a tremendous amount of money. And I'm hoping the gas tax will pass at 10 cents. Again, I wanted a little bit more debate on where that 10 cents was set, why it was set at 10 cents. I myself would have possibly been a little bit more aggressive on that and went up to like 15 cents. And then tried to bring in some private sector money to step up and understand that we definitely need assistance on maintaining these streets due to neglect of many years in the past to get to this point. So again, my position is we need more data from the City Club to substantiate this $200 million a year, and we need more assistance from the private sector, and I'm hoping Google and Uber will step up and provide that additional assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Then a motion, please, to
so moved.
Accept this report.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Fritz?
Well, thank you very much to our whole team. As usual, you do a spectacular job from start to finish, and I very much appreciate all of your diligent work. I think the taxpayers of Portland and the citizens of Portland need to know that in our case, lobbyists is a really good thing, and that you do a fantastic job both in the Senate and at the state level and in the in Washington, D.C. So thank you for all of the work that you do on behalf of our citizens, because we've been very successful because you've been very successful. Thank you. Aye.
Fish?
Martha, I'm very proud of this agenda, and I look forward to being invited to join you in D.C. to lobby on behalf of this agenda. Aye.
Salzman?
Well, thank you very much for your hard work. I look forward to being invited to Salem to work on this agenda. Can't wait. Hi.
Novick?
I, too, look forward to going to Salem to see the new Beltway. Thank you very much. Hi.
Hales?
If Salem needs a Beltway, there has been a lot of growth in Oregon. Hi. Thank you all very much, and we're recessed till tonight at 6 p.m. at Self Enhancement, Inc.
Charlie, can I ask you a question? Someone contacted me, and I guess I was...